The talk was about the system of meditation. That's the title. And the Tree Ratna community, as we now call ourselves, has what it calls its system of meditation. And it's actually a very useful way to make sense of all the different kinds of practices that we teach. The Buddha himself is said to have taught 40 different kinds of meditation practice called the 40 kamatanas. Kama, it's like action. So kamatana means a workplace. It's a situation where you get down to action. And I'm not going to go into all those different kinds of meditation, but you can read about those. But it just illustrates the variety, just the sheer variety of practices in Buddhist tradition. And one explanation as to why there are all these practices is that there are different approaches to meet the needs of the different temperaments of different practitioners. You know, people have different temperaments, and some people are supposed to benefit more, for example, from metta bhavana. Others would really benefit, I think, from doing lots of mindfulness of breathing practice. So that's one reason that is cited. Another reason is that Buddhism has got a very long history, and it's also got a very wide geographical spread, and it's been through many different cultural changes. And these have thrown up some different ways of meditating. And the Tree Ratna Order and the community of friends of the Tree Ratna Order is dedicating to practicing what is useful for us now in our particular situation, our particular culture, you know, from this very extensive tradition of practice. It's quite a task, I think, for us to take on. So you hear about all these practices, various ways of doing the mindfulness of breathing. I don't know how many different ways you've heard of doing the mindfulness of breathing, but there are different approaches to that. There are different approaches to doing metta bhavana practice, development of compassion, joy, equanimity. People talk about meditation on death and dying. People talk about meditating on impermanence, on emptiness. Talk about meditation on conditions and conditionality. And then you hear about things like meditating on different forms of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, hundreds of different kinds of these visualization practices. You see those pictures around the walls sometimes, and so on. And I'd just like to tell you about all this and how it all fits together and what the vision is for all this variety of spiritual practice. And I think our system of meditation does make pretty good sense of all this by looking at the whole field of practice in terms of levels of spiritual experience. You know, the purpose of all Buddhist practice is to gain full awakening. And this system looks at the path each of us is going to traverse in getting there. Okay? You know, it divides up that path around the experience of insight, or vipassana, and this, which is the crucial stage, if you like, on the path. There's what is needed as a preparation for insight. There's the experience of insight itself, and there's what is needed for the insight experience to actually take us towards full awakening. So this might seem like quite a neat sort of sandwich, yeah? You've got the bottom slice of preparation, some kind of preparation. You can spread out this kind of central filling of insight, and you can plonk over the top of that the uppermost slice of it, as it were. A nice simple system. However, it's not quite so straightforward, because there's two stages of preparation actually, and there's also a non-stage, which you just can't fit into any of these neat categorizations. But these various stages will happen, and maybe they have happened to all of us. So it's important we understand. You know, this isn't just a theory, it's based firmly in experiences we actually need to cultivate and deepen if we want to make spiritual progress. So let's see what these are. The first two stages are called integration and positive emotion. Then, what is that now? It's number three. There's that crucial insight stage, which is rather dramatically entitled spiritual death. Okay, then finally the fourth stage, where the insight actually changes and transforms us, that's called spiritual rebirth. And then there's this fifth non-stage, which actually is extremely important. But we need to understand how the other stages work before we can really get a handle on that. So I'm just going to leave that until the end. So each of these stages, 1, 2, 3, 4, is represented by a particular meditation practice that encapsulates its essence, the essence of that stage. Yeah? Even though for us, other practices actually might contribute to that stage of spiritual progress as well. So it's not limited to that particular practice. So let's take the first stage of integration, which is represented by the mindfulness of breathing meditation, which most of us did just now. So what is integration? The word integration is connected with ideas of integrity, consistency, and somehow becoming whole. And it's very helpful, I think, to see the mindfulness of breathing meditation in that kind of way. So it's not just about concentration in a narrow sense. The concentration of mind that comes about through that practice is just a part of a bigger, longer-term process of integration. So, you know, maybe one session of practice, you're not that concentrated, but you still do it. Another session of practice, actually there's quite a bit of concentration there, but it fluctuates a bit. These things don't matter too much, because in the long-term perspective, the person, you, is coming together in a certain way. You know, the disparate threads of their life are being drawn together. The threads are being drawn together, woven into a skein, if you like, woven into a new fabric. That is our mind, and which results in a consistency of behaviour and of thought and of awareness in a new kind of integrity. And all this happens through trying, making the attempt to bring the mind together at one point, as we do in the mindfulness of breathing meditation. And in the process, of course, working against all the tendencies to distraction, the hindrances. The more we're able to meet these energies of the various desires, various fears we have, and all the unconscious habits that we don't even know about, you know, that come up as we make that attempt to focus the attention on the touch sensation of the breathing, and bring those energies more into relationship. The more we can incorporate, the more we get into relationship with this stuff that comes up, the more we can incorporate their positive energies into ourselves and become more whole, become more integrated. That's really how that process works, and it's a very, very long-term process, and it's all happening for all of us still. And as we do this, we start to experience deeper modes of consciousness. You know, mental life becomes richer on the whole. Some of us, if we're that type of person, we might have lots of significant dreams, and we usually become a bit happier and a bit more content. And when we meditate more intensively, we might experience what's known as samadhi or jhana. You know, various experiences of very deeply focused consciousness as we engage with deeper and deeper layers of the imagination. And these experiences may be accompanied by feelings of ecstasy, ecstatic ecstatic bliss and quite unprecedentedly clear thought. For some, there may be more symbolic or visionary content of these kind of experiences. It's very much dependent on different personality types. There's a massive, huge range of different experiences people have. And we can read about all that. But they're all aspects of integration. Sangharakshita has spoken about vertical and horizontal forms of integration. You know, on the horizontal, there's this integrity that I've already spoken about, that comes about in our daily thoughts and our actions, when we become more generally more present and mindful, more together as a person. And vertical integration is when new psychic, or you could even say mythic, sort of material starts coming up from the depths of the unconscious, either during meditation itself or as a result of meditation or some other kind of spiritual practice. You're just starting to make contact with the depths, and that's why it's called vertical integration. You're integrating with stuff you weren't even aware of before, if you like. So the imagination is transformed and it's enriched through this. So just to summarise this initial stage of integration, it's the mind coming together in all its heights and depths through practices that have that effect. So the mindfulness of breathing is this classic method, but actually there are many other ways to bring about this effect, as you may be thinking already, you know. And that's the important thing. The integrity and the integration is the important thing, rather than the actual method of practice. Okay, second stage. Second stage is that of positive emotion. And that's represented by the metta bhavana meditation. And the principle here is to open the heart and direct it towards others. Towards others' need for love and kindness. You direct it towards yourself as well, of course. But there's a big thing of going out and meeting the existence of other people emotionally. And you direct the heart towards others' need for love and kindness, and even others' need just for some attention. Even just to take our awareness out to other people. And the metta bhavana practice does this. It has that effect on us. As do actually many other Buddhist meditations, like the meditation on compassion. And we train ourselves in these practices. You know, it's up and down. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not good. Sometimes we never do it, etc., etc. But we train ourselves generally in finding empathy with another person. We learn to imagine what it's like to be in another person's shoes, how they might feel, and what their emotional needs might be. And you might say, you know, this isn't the only way I do this. Or you might say, this is really ethics. This is really the territory of the precepts. And it is, you know, and that just shows how meditation links in with the rest of our practice. In meditation, we cultivate the quality of metta directly. That's expressed in the way we behave. That's expressed in terms of the five precepts, which are all based on kindness. And it's amazing that we can directly create these mental and emotional qualities, you know, the quality of integrity. You can create that. You can learn to create that. The quality of positivity. We can create these qualities quite independently. You know, we don't have to find some situation in life where we can develop them, some job or some relationship. We can do that, and it's good to do that. It's important to do that. But we are always free simply to sit down, close our eyes and meditate and actually directly create love. Directly be at peace with ourselves and become a little more integrated. We can always do that. And Knowing this can affect everything we do. Meditation is, I think, one of the most valuable skills anyone could possibly learn, because it has the power to give a person so much confidence, so much happiness, and so much effectiveness. And, you know, without any special equipment, you know, you just got it. You just got your mind, and you can do that. So these are the two, what I called the preparatory stages before insight: integration and positive emotion. They're more or less on the same level. I don't think they're really one stage on from another. We could argue about that, but they more or less work together. More integration, I think, helps us be more positive. There's more of us to be positive with, if you like. And more positivity takes us more deeply into that integration. It brings more energy into the practice. It awakens more energy. But when we get to the stage of spiritual death, there's a decisive shift. And you can tell, you know, just by the language. That's enough, you know. Spiritual death is when, after years, maybe, of reflecting on the nature of things, we suddenly get a real glimpse of non-dual reality, of the way things really are. We see, even if it's just for a moment, the insubstantiality and the vastness of everything. And that all our ideas are, in a way, just empty. That even what we think is our actual experience is really very often just a set of ideas, assumptions and concepts that we always kind of superimpose. We kind of superimpose them on something, on a reality that we can't describe. It's impossible to describe. So you can see from the way I'm talking how the term spiritual death was arrived at. You know, I wouldn't like you to be put off by that word, death. But of course, any kind of death is naturally something one fears. If we start seeing vipassana or insight practice as something to be wary of, that may make it more rather unlikely that we'll try very seriously to develop any. However, I don't think this idea that it's scary is all that puts us off vipassana, actually. I think there's also something I detect that's a kind of aversion to life on the other side of insight. I think we can imagine insight to be a bit kind of not much fun somehow, a bit grave, a bit sober, pretty dull, a bit worthy, you know, in the negative sense, you know, a bit cooped up without an outlet for our colourful passions and interests. And I think that also puts us off quite a lot, you know. You know, with none of what in sort of more pagan language we might call soul. It doesn't have soul, right? That's sometimes how we can come to see spiritual transformation. But actually there's nothing soulless, grey or colourless about life on the other side of that. Anyway, I need to stay on topic here. We're talking, because I'm straying into spiritual rebirth a bit, we're talking about the moment of the insight experience itself, that flash of insight that comes like lightning on a pitch black night. And just for a single instant, it illuminates everything, and after that, everything's different. So this spiritual death is essentially the collapse of the assumption that we are a fixed ego, that we are a very definite, clear and unchanging person, which is something we can't help going through life with. The reality is something far less easy to get a handle on. But in fact, the idea of getting a handle on anything really is one of those assumptions that collapse at this point. Reality in the end is simply not describable, which is a bit of a problem really. You know, words are words. Words are not realities. You know, a word like Kamala Sheela or a word like myself, you take the word like that, it's got some kind of validity, it means something. It does point towards some kind of experience, but it's not the reality of that experience. That reality is just not accessible to the ordinary mind that always assumes it can get a handle on it, that assumes it can fully understand it. In our tradition, the stage of spiritual death is associated with the six-element practice. Even though any of the thousands of insight meditation practices in Buddhist tradition will induce it, and it could even happen spontaneously. I reckon it fairly often does happen spontaneously, actually. But let's look at this six-element practice. In the six-element practice, we get in touch through mindfulness with each of the basic elements of our experience, which are called earth, water, fire, air, space, and consciousness. And these things, these elements, are such basic experiences that we totally take them for granted. That's what they are. We never question them until we do this practice. We never question, for example, having the sense experience of hardness and softness. It's just a given, in a way. It's always there in some form, in our bottom on the chair, basically. The chair itself. The floor that the chair's on. You know, the road outside, trees and buildings. You know, this, the earth element, has been so much part of our experience ever since we were born. And even before we were born. It's always been there. We don't question it. So much has it been there that we automatically tend to associate the earth element with me. It's quite natural. It's our world. It's also our body. And we think of this body, our bones, flesh and skin, as me. Or maybe we think of it somehow as mine. But how can we really believe that? In reality, we have had nothing to do with creating this world. This mind and this body just somehow strangely arrived. And it's actually a total mystery. To think of my skin and bones as mine is just the conventional way to talk about it. Actually, we have very little control over it, and we can't change the fact that sooner or later, the earth element in us will just return to being what it always has been. That is just the earth element. The earth, that is the road outside, the trees and the grass. It's just a quality of existence that's really a little ridiculous to claim as one's own. So anyway, that's the meditation. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. We go through each of the elements in this way. Water, fire, warmth, air, space, and consciousness. It's very thorough. And each stage is a little bit different because it's all about us, our personal way of relating to it. It's all about our personal conditioning. You know, some of these elements we might identify rather less as me, some more. But when we get to the element of consciousness, here we really do identify very strongly with it as me. Yeah. But then when you actually, in the meditation, or even just in reflection, when you really do look into it, you see that the identification as me or mine doesn't really hold water, doesn't really fit somehow. The reality is just something else. And that's quite okay. You just see the reality of it a bit more clearly. So this kind of reflection leads, in time, to really profound insights. Because it's true that we cannot own, in any sense, our bodies and minds. And hence, there is eventually this collapse of the old way of seeing things. It's not necessarily as dramatic as I've described it here. And it's not necessarily as dramatic as this sort of tag of spiritual death. But there is a definite collapse. It might be a gentle collapse, all right? A breakdown of the old world, the old way of seeing things. And that collapse creates a space for a new way of doing and seeing things. And that's the next stage of practice, that of spiritual rebirth. And in a way, this stage happens automatically as a kind of momentum that comes out of the realization itself, which just takes us forward into a new kind of life, the life, the other side of insight. But there's also a meditation associated with the stage of spiritual rebirth, which makes a lot of sense at this point. It's the recollection of the Buddha. Buddha Shakyamuni, the historical Buddha, who gained full awakening and started this whole tradition of awakening. There are many forms of this kind of meditation, and order members get one of them at ordination. It's one of the big things that happen at ordination, getting what's known as a sadhana practice. And this doesn't mean that the person being ordained has necessarily reached this stage of spiritual progress. The meditation is useful anyway, even beforehand. And you can imagine why that might be. You know, imagining the Buddha means taking the Buddha, or maybe an archetypal form like Tara or Padmasambhava, Vajrasattva, as a model for the unfoldment of one's spiritual progress. It's a kind of a model, or even an example, a personal example. You know, you imagine them. I mean, it's just an image in your mind, which may not be visual. It's just some kind of image. And doing this, I think, teaches you quite a bit. Just doing that teaches you quite a bit. In the first place, it's rather astonishing that we have an image of the Buddha in our mind. And so it's something very mysterious about that, because we all do have that, you know. What is that image? What kind of a thing is it? We have an image of ourselves as well. We have this kind of self-image. What is that about, you know? Well, this kind of practice works with this imaginal aspect of the mind. You get in relationship with that image of the Buddha using mantra and other techniques, and these allow something to come across from the other side, as it were, whatever that is. You know, there's a strong sense at this point, not only of non-self, which came with the lightning flash of spiritual death, but also of this non-self individual, this impermanent stream of spiritual energy, that is me and you, being influenced by the Dharma out there, beyond our individual selves somehow. The Dharma that's far bigger than our own separated self. We are not what we seem, and the reality of things is bigger than us. It's in this kind of meditation that we learn to trust that bigger reality, and we learn to trust it to come in, as it were, and influence us. And this is that's a way of putting the whole process of spiritual rebirth. That's all a bit mysterious. I can't help that. You know, perhaps the word process is a helpful way to explain these different stages. You know, each of these stages is a definite stage of spiritual progress. Integration definitely does come first, I think. Once we have a little of that process, just a little bit of that process going, we can start adding in some positive emotion, or contacting some positive emotion. And the integration process continues, it just keeps going, but along with that process of development of love. And that's our spiritual practice, basically, until little bits of a bigger kind of illumination start sparking off. There are these little insights that come from our various reflections. And then sometimes, if we allow the practice to go really deep, perhaps with the aid of some Vipassana meditation, sometimes there comes a big illumination, a real spiritual death, a real seeing through of the ego. This again is a definite stage of spiritual progress. But as you can see, there are degrees of it, and some bits of it might come quite early. Some people have these sorts of experiences, these big experiences, and they aren't really ready for them, and they are somewhat shattered by them. This can happen too. You really need the cushioning effect of the positive emotion and the integration. That's the ideal, that's the best. Without integration, there's nothing to hold the experience and learn from it. And then the spiritual rebirth brings all these processes together. There's a further integration, you could say, which includes the positive emotion and the insight as well. So that initial experience is kind of brought down to earth in the spiritual rebirth. It's about bringing that down to earth. It's brought into the real world, you could say. And it's no more, it's not anymore some kind of visionary experience, but it's translated into one's life and into one's work. So you can see these different ways of meditating, concentrating, opening up to positive emotion, reflecting on the real nature of things and seeing through the insubstantial nature of things, and then opening up to the influence of the Buddhas, something bigger, as it were, however we might see that, open to the influence of reality, letting that transform you, and then bringing it down, chunking it down to earth, applying it to real life. And that again involving concentration, integration, positive emotion as well. There's a sort of processes within processes here. But there is something missing. And that's the joker in the pack. Because actually insight is not an experience that can be created. You can't make it happen. It just comes when it wants to come. It comes in its own time. Concentration can be created through various efforts. Not always easy, but it can be done. Set up the right conditions and you'll get some concentration. Positive emotion is the same. You can create the conditions and you can get there. You can get some of that. Even spiritual rebirth, you can create that in a certain way. But insight, you can set up all the conditions you like, and it's not going to come along just because you want it to. Insight is totally spontaneous. And spontaneity is something that needs a place, I think, in our system of practice. All this effort, all this training, all this creating and cultivating and making things happen has a certain kind of effect. It's a bit one-sided, if you like. We all know that too much pushing makes you narrow and gives you a bit of a headache, right? That we all know there needs to be a space in which you do nothing and just allow something fresh to enter in. Something which could never have been predicted. So this is the non-stage of the system of meditation. It isn't a stage of spiritual progress because it needs to be there all the time. You could say that this spontaneity gets more significant after the stage of insight, after spiritual death, because it has a lot in it about opening up in a very spontaneous way. But it needs to be there in all our practices. So that's it in principle. But it's also associated with a meditation practice, the just sitting meditation. And for all these reasons, that just sitting is a very important practice. The just sitting practice isn't really a meditation at all, because certainly you don't try to meditate. You don't even close your eyes. You don't withdraw from the senses, as you do in meditation normally. You don't even try to concentrate your mind. You don't try to develop any positive emotions. You don't try to do anything. The only thing you do one thing, and you are mindful. You just be aware of whatever comes up and just keep doing that. And actually, this is very difficult to do. But it is a way to learn to be more alive and spontaneously aware in one's life. It is a way of getting a life, you could say. My friends are always saying to me, Kamala Sheila, get a life. Please get a life, Kamala Sheila. And this is my way of doing that. I just sit. It's my way of getting more in contact with that more spontaneous part of me. And I do think it's working. And I hope that we will all do this. I mean, just sitting, or mindfulness, let's call it that, is, as the Buddha said, the only way. A little bit controversially, but he said that. It's the only way. Because the only way is through awareness. Through awareness, through mindfulness, comes the entire transformative process of integration, yeah, positive emotion, spiritual death also, and spiritual rebirth. It all comes out of that awareness and mindfulness. And that's all we've got to say. Thank you.
Thank you.